I'm Gabby. I'm a recovered alcoholic. I think there may be a little mix-up. My sobriety date is January 10th of 2016. So, but one day at a time, right? And I want to say thank you, Rick, for inviting me to speak. It means a lot. And thank you, Stepping Stones, for having me. I get to do service today. And service really was so much in early recovery as it is today. Just being useful and being a purpose. So I have a sponsor. Her name is Denise Kay. She's amazing. She is a sponsor. I work with incredible women in the program. I have a network. I have incredible friends in this room, truly. My home group is the Holly Springs group. We meet Tuesday and Thursdays right up here. Six is United Methodist Church. And I'm just really humbled to be here. I get to share my experience, strength, and hope with you. And take a breath for a minute, you know. I was given a little note from a home group member to put in my pocket, right here, over my heart. And it says God. And the whole point of this is how to establish a relationship with God. Because I came in here an agnostic, and I thought I was an atheist. Not quite. But I didn't think this would work for me because I didn't believe in God, I thought. I knew I was an alcoholic, but I didn't think a program would actually work. But it takes action. So I wanted to start in the literature because that's where I get my direction. And I wanted to start on page 28 and 29. A new life has been given to us, or if you prefer, a design for living that really works. I remember my first sponsor gave me this image. I'm a big image person, and she's like, Gabby, you never have to drink again. That was the first thing she told me. I was like, oh, wow, I've never been told that before. And then she gave me her hand and said, you know, this program is designed to fit us like a glove. And it really stayed with me to this day. And then we moved to page 29, and we read, further on, clear-cut directions are given showing how we recovered. And then it follows, each individual in the personal stories describes in his own language and from his own point of view the way he established his relationship with God. And that was through the steps and taking action and getting honest. You know, it took me a little, I won't say too long to get in these rooms, but I don't think it's too late unless you're 6 feet in the ground. So I'm here to tell you what I was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And I will begin with where I was born. I'm from Atlanta, born and raised right here in the city, down by the Emory area, not too far from here. My parents, my dad's side, no alcoholism that I really know of. He was raised just simple life, super nice guy, really smart guy, great, wonderful father. My mom was raised in a home that had a little more turmoil. Her father was an alcoholic. And my uncles were alcoholics, so her brothers were alcoholics. So I learned this through the program, why I had some character defects that I don't want to say came from my mom, but I learned a lot. Our parents conditioned us, and we actually conditioned them as alcoholics. And she learned to keep people at an arm's length, always. She started at a young age, you know, very scared, you know, how to walk on eggshells, because it got really volatile in her world. She loved her parents very much, but it was scary. And so I learned that from her. I learned too later on, and I'll tell you a little bit later on, I just said that, it took time for me to get closer to people when I got sober, because I learned that from her, you know. And I'm going to be transparent. My network was very light earlier on. Now I would say I have more trust in leaning into that. And when I am doing Gabby's will, I know I'm not growing. And when I'm doing God's will and I'm uncomfortable, that's where I can grow. So that's been a big muscle I've been working actually here at, you know, 7 years sober, and it's cool. You know, it's an ongoing process. You know, this isn't a perfect process. The only thing I have to do perfectly is step one. So I had a great childhood. My sister and I, not an alcoholic, we had no alcohol in our family. My parents didn't drink around us. I don't think I ever saw wine, alcohol, whatever it is, around. And the only time maybe was at a New Year's Eve party. My parents might have had some champagne, but we weren't exposed to liquor. And it was a wonderful childhood. Things started shifting around 12, kind of puberty, 7th grade. I started turning inward. No reason, really. I'm still kind of doing some digging around that. Not sure if there was like public humiliation in middle school, because you know how tough middle school can be. But I started changing, and I started thinking I was less than. I was a popular, confident, happy girl, and then things shifted. And I started leaning into, not to go outside of the first tradition, but I had body image issues. And so I took to the next level, as all alcoholics would do. I became very self-absorbed and scared. And I also started being terrified of growing up in seventh grade as a 12-year-old. What was I going to do in the future? How was I going to take care of myself? All these things, all this pressure that I never had given to me. And my parents loved me. They never told me, you got to go all the way. You got to go to college at 12. Like, I was just so terrified to grow up. That was pretty much it. So I got stuck there, you know, and that's kind of where my emotional levels was stunted for a long time. So nothing crazy. I had my first drink at 12. I had Goldschlagers. It was, you know, delicious. And I was always able to have alcohol. My friend who was came from an Irish family, there was always booze at her house. So we drank, and it wasn't anything crazy. I didn't like black out. And then we all moved into high school. These are all friends I grew up with, and nothing crazy. Just partying on the weekends, going to school on the weekdays. I will say, though, I carried that actor into my high school days. I pretended. I became a really good liar. And I never wanted to be in high school. I didn't want to do it. I don't know what it was. I just struggled. And I was so popular. I was pretending to, like, oh, life is good. You know, high school. But my first day back from school, my mom was like, hey, Gabby, how was school? I was like, oh, I'm ready to graduate. And she's like, great, four more years of this. But I coasted, and I learned how to, like, fly under the radar. And that was pretty much what I did, and I always, you know, had a place to go to drink. It was really no problem. Once again, no blackout crazy drunks. It was just a pretty normal high school experience, maybe. Some people don't drink in high school. I don't know. It's pretty normal for me. So the one thing I also uncovered is I didn't have a lot of structure growing up. My parents are pretty liberal. They trusted me. So I got away with a lot. As long as I came home or told them where I was, they were like, okay, Gabby, have fun. You know, your friends are great. Innocent, not. And so I always came home. But I respected my parents. They were wonderful. They gave me everything. They did the best they could, as my sponsor told me, you know. And I actually realized I had a resentment towards unstructured, you know, not having structure in my life. Because now as a mom and a person who has, you know, who's able to actually parent and raise a kid, I believe that structure is good. And structure got me through the steps, you know. This program gave me that, you know. Oh, gosh. I'm so grateful for that. Sorry. I have my notes so I don't get sidetracked. You know me. I can go from, like, 1 to 12, circle around, and come back to 2. It's just crazy. Who knows? So I go into college. That was short-lived. I moved to California. I told my parents I wanted to go to California. And they're like, okay, Gabby. And I was excited. I was excited to start fresh, you know. It's kind of what we do. We do geographics, even if we don't know that we're, you know, already progressing in our illness. And I was ready. I was excited. And then I met a guy. And he was cute. He was smart. And he was a drug dealer. And the drug dealer on campus. And he always had alcohol. He was older. So it was perfect. It worked out for me. I actually got through school. I got through, like, that year okay. But I started lying. I was 3,000 miles away from my parents. I was able to say, yeah, I'm doing okay. I just kind of got by in school. And I started moving away from what I was doing, what I was meant to be doing. I was given such a gift. What an opportunity my parents gave me. So unfortunately, things start just, of course, progressing. At 17, I was very young in college, so 17, 18, I had my first drunk. My mom actually came to visit, and this was that incomprehensible demoralization we talk about in literature. I woke up on a beanbag, and I'm an angry drunk, okay? I'm a rager. I do things, I don't know why, and I think I learned a lot, not blaming my mom, because she's incredible, but she would go from 0 to 10 growing up. She even told my dad that, who was, like, the most egoless, humble human, very patient, this is what you get, you know? And I learned that. And I think I did not have a pause button. You know, there was instant just snap, right? Oh, gosh. And so thankfully, this program helps with that. So that situation, I woke up, not sure what happened. My friend, who's just as crazy as I am, was pissed off at me. And my mom was looking at me with just those eyes, like, what's going on? And I could just tell something, I hurt her, you know? But everything gets swept under the rug, and we keep moving forward. So life falls apart out west pretty quickly. Just not to go into crazy details, but just so you know, I'm an alcoholic. I get into a severe car accident, and I have no consequences. The cops come up to me. They pull me out of the car, and they're like, "Are you okay?" I'm like, "Clearly not okay." But they say, "Here's my card. Call me. I don't get a DUI. I don't get a breathalyzer. Nothing. It's nuts. You know, in the windy roads of California, you're almost hanging off cliffs." So it was crazy. I don't know. And then another situation, and this is kind of where it was done. I was trying not to get out of that, by the way. I always try to figure out how to not tell my parents that my life's falling apart. It's just nuts. My boyfriend was kind of going forward in his healing. I don't like to go into that. But I basically dropped out of school and became this, you know, side handle for him, you know. And one thing leads to another. My car gets impounded. DEA comes to the door. Story over. You know, I have to tell my parents. And the only reason I told my parents was because my car got impounded. I was trying to figure out ways. Okay, they're not going to figure this out. And then they're like, "Your car is impounded." I'm like, "Jeez." So that was it from California. You know, just self-will run riot. It's just, it was out of control. And I had no consequences. You know, that was an issue. You know, my parents, once again, doing the best they could. I don't know if they knew what to do, you know? So I moved back home, did another geographic, did a whole nother, like, life in another town, went to college, built it up, came crashing down. Moved back to Georgia, did the same thing. Just all these patterns, you know, unmanageability. So I decide at this point, my friends are all drinking, but they're all getting up and going to work. They're all graduated. They're all starting to get their lives back together. And I'm just this loser, you know? I mean, I am not growing. I'm not able to do what they're doing. I'm trying to control my drinking. And I end up in places all over Atlanta, dive bars, dark areas of town. You know, I hang out with a lot of older people, and I get away with it. And my parents were very enabling. They don't know that. I mean, I don't tell that to my mom today. but I was very privileged and given a lot. And I told my sponsor that recently, because I was like, "Oh, I don't want to share that." And she goes, "Well, I wouldn't want your life, you know?" And I appreciate that, you know, it gets you humble real quick. So the next 5 years, I'm going to rehab, in and out of rehab, that I'm trying to control my drinking, you know? And I think that's it. I'm going to go. I'm going to feel better. And it's great, you know? You feel great when you go to treatment. It's awesome. You get to exercise, and you get to hear some, you know, crazy stories or some drama. And I didn't like that part, but I was introduced to the literature. And we went to meetings. We did all that. So AA was a constant in my 20s. I was aware of what it was, but I was not ready to stop. And I told myself, I think around like 23 or, gosh, I don't know, maybe actually it was 17. But I told myself, I have till 25 years old to get my life together. I can still figure this out. I mean, it doesn't work like that. But that's how delusional I was. So I always like to go back to like this emotional level I'm at. I'm 12 going on 27 now, all right? And life is happening. I have zero coping skills, okay? And no idea I'm an alcoholic, even though, you know, it's obvious now. So I'm 27 years old. I go to my final stint in rehab. It's a Talbot Recovery down in South Atlanta. It's an excellent rehab. And once again, given all these amazing opportunities by my parents, and this time I'm doing it. I'm doing it right. So I get 3 months in there and get out, and then I meet my husband and love of my life. And he's an alcoholic. So we are both sober at the time, and we're kind of doing the deal. We go to some meetings. We have a home group. We're kind of doing the 1-2-3 shuffle, is what I like to call it. You know, 1-2-3 shuffle. What's this book? Don't open it. You know. And then I get a sponsor. It's kind of cool that, you know, a group of girls, because I'm trying to figure out what that is even. And she's not really holding my feet to the fire, but she's really nice. And I don't really remember ever doing much, but seeing her a couple times in the meetings and going to some, in maybe trying to do some work. I don't even think she knew how to sponsor. Sorry, I don't even think she knew how to sponsor. Sorry, guys. I'm a little hard when it comes to that. So we end up getting pregnant, and we are on the honeymoon phase, and we're sober, and we are not drinking, but we start moving away from the program. We stop going to meetings, right? I've never gotten into the literature. And we are so ecstatic to be pregnant. I mean, over the moon. I honestly always wanted to be a mom. So I think it's one of the best jobs that I've ever been given, and I'm grateful to be a present mother today. So we get pregnant, ride that wave for a while. I think it's like 10 months, clearly, you know, I'm pregnant, and I have no defense against the next drink, right? So we are at a wedding. We have our son, and we go to a wedding, and we're hanging out, and life is good. No issue. Don't think we're going to drink. And we are served mocktail mojitos. I don't know if they were mocktails, but I don't know. I didn't taste any alcohol in them. And we both look at each other, and it's on. You know, it is on, as my husband says, on like Donkey Kong. You know, like we go. Like we are ready to just partay. And there's no pause. I didn't have any solution. I wasn't working any steps. And that takes me into the next 4 years of a nightmare. And it's hard, you know, you can't really, you know, everyone here knows how crazy it is, but we're trying to manage adulting, you know, we're trying to manage this life that happens so fast. And during this time, I'm 28, have this beautiful boy. I have a house. I grew up real quick. We had an apartment, and then my husband's like, let's get a house. I'm like, a house? Like, what? What are you talking about? I'm happy here. We could, like, raise a kid in a two-bedroom apartment. This is fine. Right down in Atlantic Station, and he was like, we gotta get a house. I'm like, okay. My dad gets terminal illness, gets really sick. That shakes up a lot of stuff in my home, my life with my sister and my mom. It really stresses our relationship. And we're drinking this entire time. So all of this life stuff starts happening, and I'm doing the best I can, you know? So, the spiral continues, the vicious cycle continues. We're drinking and driving a lot. We always have booze wherever we go. And just look, just so you know, my husband is totally cool with me talking about him. He gets it. I've actually asked him, just so you know. And during the day, I'm trying to be the mom. I have this amazing schedule for my son, like, you know, raising a little one, God bless you guys in the early phase, but we are 11 now. And I got that down to a science, and I think I'm doing okay, you know? And I'm not drinking during the day yet. I'm not aware I'm really, you know, an alcoholic, even though I am. But I'm starting to fight a lot with my husband. We're fighting all the time because we feel good during the day, and then we put our baby to bed, and the nighttime comes, and it's just like a vicious cycle over and over again. We're talking all-nighters, guys. We get pretty loaded, too. I keep with singleness and purpose, but that's a big part of my story as well. So the train wouldn't stop, you know, and it's really hard. I don't know, and I'm so grateful. I don't know how we did it for so long, but this disease, man, it will survive. And I sometimes can't believe it was 4 years of this chaos. So over the next 4 years, we're just in this vicious cycle, and my violence and my anger comes out a lot. I take a screwdriver to a TV at some point. I'm just angry at my husband because I'm starting to think I do miss us when we were sober. You know, I want us to get sober. I want us to be that couple again. It's impossible to get people sober, guys, okay? It's hard enough to get sober, you know? So fast forward to the time I'm ready to start going into the program. It's around March of 2015. I walk into NABA down in Atlanta, and I meet my first sponsor. And I get a white chip, and she gives me her number, and she says, you never have to drink again. And I was like, wow, that's cool. So I'm ready. I'm ready to do this, but I'm still doing the 1-2-3 shuffle. I'm not reading the big book, you know. And a couple months go by, and my husband's not ready to get sober either. And we are so codependent. I'm so codependent because we were sober together. You're supposed to be doing this for me now. And it doesn't work. It doesn't work at all. So I call my sponsor. I've had enough. I'm like, well, this isn't going to work. He's not going to get sober. So I do call my sponsor from the farmer's market in Atlanta, and I just say, Liz, I'm just going to call, and I just want to let you know I'm going to drink today. Thank you for working with me. And she's like, okay, Gabby, do your thing. And and that was it. And so the next thing is kind of where the progression I see. I'm able to see the progression. I have one more, but I have another stint out in Colorado for a wedding we went to. That was why I wanted to drink, right? We just have all these excuses. If there is no pause between, no tools between the next, between you and the next drink, you're going to drink. So I go to Colorado, total blackout drunk. If you've been to Colorado, you know the altitude's so high. If I've been sober for 60, 90 days, going to 10,000 feet in Telluride, I mean, total blackout. And I humiliated myself. Don't remember. humiliated myself. I humiliated my husband. He wanted nothing to do with me. But I was still angry at him because of all these years, we were just fighting and going through. It wasn't all bad. Okay, I'll rewind. There was some good stuff. But it, for the most part, I resented him from the moment we started drinking because I wanted us to be who we were before we drank. Because we, it's awesome. You know, life is good today. So we get back to Atlanta. We pull family through all this. And it's a family disease. We talk about that even throughout all my 20s. You know, I'm pulling my family through the mud. And it's heartbreaking. And that we condition them. You know, I condition, I shape, just like my mom shaped me. We shape our parents or the people who are around us. Thank God for Al-Anon. So to getting to, like, where I had to what happened. December 2015, another all-nighter Christmas holiday party, you know. And by this time, my life is so small, okay? We drink at home, we kind of go down the street to get some more wine, or we didn't have Instacart then, so I did somehow get food. I don't even know if I was drinking at that point because I just drank alcohol. But our lives didn't go outside of a certain perimeter, you know, because we drank and drove. So it was a very, very small life, thinking this is a normal life. It's not a normal life. So what happened? We had a huge fight one morning around before Christmas, and there's this, I don't know what it was. I was just feeling, I was a mess, guys. You know, I was black and blue, super thin, my liver's failing, my hair, it just looked like that. I look back at pictures, I'm like, God, everybody knew, you know, everybody knows. Some rage I'm in, and my husband's trying to go to work, and he's mad because we're at our end. And there's this whole thing of frames, beautiful frames that he has hung up in the house, and they come crashing down in some kind of fight. We never got physical, really, but that was kind of the pivotal moment for me. And then I see my little boy walk out of his room, and there's glass everywhere, and it's like 8 a.m., guys, and he looks at the glass and he walks around and he's just being what a 2-year-olds do. They don't really know, but they see mommy and daddy mad. And John leaves. I'm screaming at him, and I sit down on the couch. I look up and I have a moment of clarity. Did the skies open up? No, but I had a spiritual experience. I had a white light moment. And I knew what I had to do. I, for once, didn't want to take anything from my mom and dad. My dad had died, I'm sorry. I didn't want to take anymore. I was highly enabled. I was given the world, and I no longer wanted to take. And I no longer wanted to get John sober. I wanted, that's my husband. And I decided that was it. So I packed us up, and I moved to my mom's house. It wasn't that far, but I knew I needed separation. We were both full-blown alcoholics at this point. And I didn't want to raise my kid like this anymore. So I knew what I had to do. I detoxed, and then I took a shower. That's hard enough. And I drove down the street to Napa, and I got my white chip. And that was, if I'm God willing, both my husband and I will be recovered 8 years in January. So I started doing these little things, you know. I called Liz. I called her back. She's like, hey, Gabby. And I knew you'd need me, but she's amazing. And I got a big book, and I started reading it that night. I had to get clear, but I was at my mom's house, and it felt like forever, but I think it was only a few weeks, you know. But I was in literature, and I was just reading, highlighting. I read the To Wives chapter a lot, you know, being married to an alcoholic. You know, you think you got to dabble in Al-Anon and all that stuff, but it spoke to me. I was hopeless, guys. I was not desperate. I was hopeless. I was done, you know. I have not forgotten that day. I have not forgotten that moment, you know. I have a story for you if I have time, which it looks like I still do. So I got a sponsor. I went to 2 meetings a day. I started writing notes. I was a little note taker in those meetings. All the things, you know. I went to roundups in Atlanta. My husband and I started doing some counseling and some family enmeshment we had to kind of work on top of ourselves. He started actually working the program as well, separately. Doing each other's inventories kind of popped up at times, so we had to work on that, and it's pretty easy to do. I did simple things. Service in the early phase is huge. Little things like holding doors, baking cookies, saying hello to the newcomer, you know. If you have a day, you have more than that person walking through this room, you know. So the big one was going on a retreat, And my sponsor was like, yeah, come to this Al-Anon AA retreat with me. And I'm like, ugh, what do you mean? Like, women? Like, what are we doing here? No. And she's like, Gabby, just trust me. And I'm like, can I drive? She's like, yes, you can drive. So drive separately. That's what I meant. So I basically started learning how to live. And I started building my foundation. And it happened slow, you know, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. But I was so willing. I was so in it. My sponsor was like, you are the easiest person to sponsor at this point. But, you know, I had to be ready. You know, I had to get honest. And I'll talk about the steps in a minute. But I was baby starting to just crawl, you know. I look at myself in the program and I think I'm almost a preteen. But, you know, it's cool. It's cool. But, yeah, I definitely had no – I didn't have any tools of life. I had no coping skills, like I said. So what happens? The solution on page 25, we talk about that. And I love that whole paragraph. I won't read it. But at the bottom, it says, we have found much of heaven and we have been rocketed into a fourth dimension of existence of which we had not even dreamed. That whole solution, that's basically, if you read it, that is the program in a nutshell. But the steps for me, so I can just go through it, you know, like step one, I had to get honest. I was hopeless. Like I said, I was not desperate. Step two, came to believe. I did not know what that meant, but I heard someone say coming to believe means you don't have to know. You know, you just have to, you know, just start. And I told myself, what do I have to lose? You know, trying this thing. I can always go back out and drink. You know, I had to kind of psych myself out at the beginning. I had to have an open mind, as it says in the 12 and 12. Step three, made a decision. Surrender. Yeah. I just got down on my knees and did the third set prayer. I kept it simple. I didn't know what God was. I didn't know what this whole thing was. But hope of the rooms, my sponsor, you know, people looking good and cleaned up. Like, there was something there they had I wanted. That third set prayer. Every single day, morning, my husband and I would say it by the bedside. And I memorized that. You know, that was really helpful for me. And it still is. I said it right before I came. Step four, the inventory. That is one of the most overthought things we have in this room. I don't get it. I don't know if I want to blame treatment or not, but get busy. You know, action and willingness. Let's not overcomplicate this thing, guys. I wrote like a book, and thank God for my sponsor. She was so sweet. It only took 2.5 hours to read, but I'll get into that later. But, I mean, the inventory, you get in, you're officially in the society, you know, you get in, you get, you're kind of in, you know, you're like, okay, you get to drop the rock, as we say, but that's courage, you know, don't overthink it. I've heard nine words or less recently. Step five, that was easy, told my sponsor, and I felt good after. Some people feel pretty tired or crappy, but the whole point is to, like, not unpack, like, all this and make you feel bad. It's just to let it go, you know. Step six, the willingness to move towards my higher power, like willingness to do God's will. It's a practice, you know. We'll get to that at step 10. But man, you know, gosh, just to be like, okay, I'm ready. Because some people want to, you know, I myself, you know, I have that character defect of anger, and that's that evil and corroding thread we read about in literature. And that awareness really is good. That's what that fourth step helped me see. And step seven, humbling, ask Him to remove our shortcomings. Humility, get on my knees again, you know, and that's that ego puncturing we read about as well. Made a list. That was pretty easy. I didn't have a huge list. I have a cool little story. I made a 15-year amends this April. No idea it was going to happen. I had been thinking about it. It was an ex-boyfriend. Gosh, it's just a great guy. And I'm sure, you know, you kind of always think about, where are those people? What are they doing now? And totally random situation. I was at the gym. I was looking healthy, right? So that's good. You always run into people when you're looking good. Like, you fill the bar. And I was walking out of the weight room, and I see these feet. And you just know when you can, like, see people, like, kind of from the side of your eye, he dead stops. And I keep going. And I'm going, like, doing my workout. And I'm like, is that on? It's been, like, I can't believe it. So I go looking for him. And he's in the corner, you know, like a vacuum gets stuck in the corner. He's in the corner, grown man, just like doing this. He's like, is that Gabby? I don't even know, is that Gabby? And I go, Ron. And he's like, Gabby. And I just immediately, we just connected, and I was able to clean up something I'd had for so long. And it just kind of came out.
And it was cool, and I was at peace with that. And my sponsor calls them God shots. It's a cool thing. I've had so many God shots this year. It's just amazing. And we were at peace, and we ended it, and that was it, you know? So, my amends, I sought counsel before I did my amends. Highly recommend it. Definitely write your list and talk to your sponsor before you do that. That was beautiful because I got love back. You know, I say nine times out of ten, you might have someone throw a door in your face. Someone just shared that at a meeting, or someone just may run from you. I mean, that might happen, but no one can kill you guys, okay? So it's okay. And the intention and the motive behind it, at least you're willing to do it. You don't have to do them all right away, you know? But mine went really well, and I got nothing but love back. I wrote a couple bullet points, got straightforward with them, and I asked them, is there anything you want to say? And they're like, we love you, you know? Anyway, yeah, still hits hard, you know? So 10, that thought life, we get to do that spot check inventory, you know, when we want to talk about that guy who just cut us off, or we think about the kid, you know, the things that you just want to do, and you're like, wait, God, there you are. That's my 10th step. You know, I get to constantly have that conscious contact with my higher power. 11, thought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him. That is not yoga, you guys, okay? I mean, for me, it is direction in the morning and talking to God at night. Where was I selfish at night, you know? Did I gossip? Did I get pulled into that? In the morning, God helped me with my thoughts. It's that simple. It's in the literature. Just read it. Don't overthink this. Simple, okay? Simple and not perfect. All right, so moving forward to what it's like now, I have to have notes, guys. You know where my head goes. I'm a free woman today. I always say that. I have been relieved of the obsession to drink alcohol, and it's a miracle I don't drink today. It's truly amazing. I have a recovered husband, and like I said, we are both sober and very present parents. And it took work, though, you know? It didn't happen overnight. I work, in terms of AA, I'm very active with working with other alcoholics. To me, that is like the dessert of the program. I love working with women in this program. Love it. It can get me out of Gabby so fast, you know? I meet with my sponsor weekly. She was like, oh, we're going to meet weekly. I'm like, all right, we're going to do this. And we work on the traditions right now. And she's a great friend. You know, she's an amazing woman. And if I have time, I actually have a little time, I'm going to tell you a story, like I said. I'm going to be transparent with you. I study the big book. I go to big book workshops. I do roundups. I am in the literature. A lot of you all see me. I'm always highlighting and learning. To me, this comes alive, no matter where I'm at in sobriety. You know, one month, 7 years, this book is alive and well. This is me, right? I have a network of men and women in my life. You know who you are. Guys, that was one thing I did not utilize a lot in the fellowship. I kind of used my husband as a crutch. I kind of had that. It's easy, you know, when you have a sober husband. It's easy. And I used the excuse, I had that distance like my mom had, you know, and getting closer to people. And I think it was just because I don't want to let people down in my life. I don't know why. So I appreciate that. You're doing me a service. I trust that God got me there. It's so cool. And this is 7 years, you know? I didn't lean into that for a long time. I was scared of the fellowship for a long time. Something was wrong with it, right? So it's been really amazing this last year to grow in that up here, because we moved up here from Atlanta. I'm a present mother today. I get to raise my boy, you know? I'm a healthy wife, daughter-in-law, you know, sister-in-law, all those things. I'm a good friend. One of the things I do is living amends. I never stop that. I canceled a lot. I didn't show up. I said I was going to be places, and I didn't show up. Today, I always show up when I'm supposed to be somewhere, unless I'm, you know, a tree falls in front of my car, or I'm sick or something. But when I commit, I commit. I do not cancel on people. I don't. I always say, you know, I'm not cured. I am recovered, as it says 22 times in this book. I don't have anything blocking me from my higher power anymore, the sunlight of the spirit. Whatever higher power it is to you, it's God to me. The barriers have come down. It's so cool. So I treat my alcoholism every day, doing that step 11, working with other women in this program, staying plugged in. And since I have a little bit of time, I wanted to share something, because I just wanted to be transparent, because it's easy to get a little off the beam in long-term sobriety. And it's such a coincidence I'm speaking here tonight, because I want to say last January, I was in one of y'all's meetings, and it was a literature meeting, and it was just a sponsor who shared something. And I heard someone share from the literature, and my ears went ding, and I needed to hear what I heard. I heard the solution. There's a lot of open discussion meetings and do your thing, you know. That's not for me. But I didn't know who it was, and I didn't stay 10 minutes after. We say get here 10 minutes early, you know, stay 10 minutes after. And I was like, God, who is that woman? And then a couple months later, I say month, I don't even know, I went to that From Me to Me retreat, right, Vicki? And a couple ladies were from Woodstock up there, and I found this lady, and I started talking to her. She didn't know I wanted her to be my sponsor yet. And so I got her number, and a couple months went by, but she told me actually at that retreat there was a prepaid convention in October, and there is a circuit speaker called Chris Raymer, who actually I've been wanting to hear for years. And he was a huge part of my husband's recovery. And the guy's amazing. He looks like a pirate. Guy's a rock star. And he's super humble. I just wanted to hear him for years. And I didn't know this whole time God's poking me. You know, he's poking me. He's like, Gabby, get where you need to be. Because my life was good, guys. I kind of coasted for a while. During the pandemic, we moved up here and just got plugged in. And my son's life was, you know, go, go, go. And I had no obsession to drink alcohol, but I got a little away from the program. I go into meetings, it was fine, but I started hearing things in the meeting. I was 7 years sober and I drank. I'm like, what? I was 20 years sober and I drank. I was 35 years sober and I drank. And I was like, what is this? Well, it says it's mental plant box, you know, we have that peculiar mental twist, you know, it happens. You do not have anything in between you and the next drink. So a couple things started happening, though. I started getting restless, irritable, and discontent. You know, the termites started happening. My spiritual malady, you know, isms, I self me started happening, you know. I'm uncomfortable in my own skin. So I text Denise, and we start working together. And I had to do some stuff, you know. I wasn't working a 10, 11, 12 for a while. You know, life just got good, coasted for a while. And I just kept hearing things, and my God was like, you better get your butt back in the AA. And so, gosh, I wouldn't be here, I don't know, if I didn't hear the solution that day in that room. I don't know. I think it's always God, truly. And I love my sponsor. I don't worship my sponsor, okay, guys? Worship God. But I have a sponsor who's going to hold my feet to the fire, you know? If you want to get a friend, a therapist in here, have fun. You might go back out and drink. But I need someone who's going to work with me. And I love it. And that's me. I don't know. It works. So, you know, this is pretty much the close of this story. But I'm just so grateful I get to have a place I can just be me. You know, coexisting in the real world is tough. I started feeling a little alone, you know, doing all these things, all these mom things, life things. But I wasn't around my people. And I realize that now. It took me a while. So I want to close, because I'm always going to read a literature guide. Sorry. But I'm going to close in a vision for you, and then a really cool quote, because I heard it in a meeting. And it reminds me of being that little baby that's growing up in this program still. And it's in a vision for you on page 152. I'm going to do my best not to get emotional. We have shown you how we got out from under. You say, yes, I'm willing, but am I to be consigned to a life where I shall be stupid, boring, and glum, like some righteous people I see? I know I must get along without liquor, but how can I? Have you a sufficient substitute? Yes, there is a substitute, and it's vastly more than that. It's a fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. There you will find release from care, boredom, and worry. Your imagination will be fired. Life will mean something at last. The most satisfactory years of your existence lie ahead. Thus we find the fellowship, and so will you. I'm going to keep reading. You are going to meet these new friends in your own community. Near you, alcoholics are dying helplessly like people in a sinking ship. If you live in a large place, there are hundreds, high and low, rich and poor. These are future fellows of Alcoholics Anonymous. Among them, you will make lifelong friends. You will be bound to them with new and wonderful ties, for you will escape disaster together, and you will commence shoulder to shoulder your common journey. Then you will know what it means to give of yourself that others may survive and rediscover life. You will learn the full meaning of love thy neighbor as thyself. Rediscover life. I wasn't living, guys. I had a very small life. If you stay in this program, even if you hit plateaus, you have bad days, which life on life's term, we can't control that, it gets better. You know, we actually have that pause. We have all those tools, the spiritual toolkit, all those things I get to put in my toolkit, blocking me, getting me away from that next drink, helping me from getting to that drink. The last thing, and I thought it was just amazing. I heard it in a meeting. Not that unique, but I liked it because it reminded me so much of this. It was by Martin Luther King Jr., and he said, if you can't fly, then run. If you can't run, then walk. If you can't walk, then crawl. But whatever you do, keep moving forward. And that's me. You know, that's what we're doing. And I'm just so grateful today. So thank you guys for listening to my story.